and experience art at the Northfield Arts Guild. Visit our galleries, arts festival, and take in a performance at our theater featuring a full season of dramas, comedies, and musicals. The Guild's gift shop showcases unique art from over 100 local and regional member artists. Come enjoy music from the Cannon Valley Regional Orchestra or the 411 Concert Series. We invite you to explore your creativity in one of our classes. All are welcome at the Northfield Arts Guild. To learn how you can be a part, visit northfieldartsguild.org or call 507-645-8877.
Art Zany, radio for the imagination, with your host Paula Granquist, is brought to you by the Northfield Arts Guild and by the Paradise Center for the Arts. And now, Art Zany, radio for the imagination.
Good morning, this is Paula Granquist, and you're tuned in to Art Zany, radio for the imagination. Thank you so much for waking up your imagination with us and for celebrating the great stories that we have to share with you on Art Zany Radio. I am going to ask a question to start off this morning. I was wondering what your family was doing in about 400 BC. Do you have any idea? If I don't even know if you took a DNA test that showed the roots of your ancestry that you will know what they were talking about around the dinner table or at the fire or what they were doing in the government or at the market. And, you know, that's the thing that makes me value art the most, because we have those connections to that world through our art. It's a pathway to understanding our past and creating our future. And so when we experience art that has endured and has been repeated and performed and read and experienced by audiences again and again over time, we can begin to connect to our human roots. This is the spirit of life that matters most, in my opinion. And so I'm not a big fan of the DNA test, because I don't think they tell us what we really think they're supposed to tell us. And that actually is what I want to know about the past, is how does imagination pass from generation to generation? We will not know that unless we experience the art from generation to generation. And when we seek to connect with that past, we study that place. We learn about its politics. We learn about its art and the artists, and compare that to the world that we know today. And this is what teaches us and shows us and should challenge us and should connect us, that art can be the revealer of our history and our imaginations and the stage to set our futures. So another question, I do really want to know this. So if some scientist is out there, if you can figure out how to trace our creative DNA, then I want to be a part of that, because I want to know what makes me a person that loves books and characters and stories and psychology and math and creating an imagination. What in my ancestry teaches me that that's important, that I want to explore that, that I want to share that? I want to know, like, how did my ancestors connect with the muse? What were their habits that let them honor that creating in their DNA? I know we have some scientists and some artists in our past, but what is it that carries through, and what do I need to do to continue to ignite that? I think that that would be a test that I would take. So I hope that the imagination of my past can continue to influence me so that I can discover what makes my imagination spark. And I hope that happens for you too. So let me know. Tell me if you develop that test. I might be more than curious about that. Today on Art Zany Radio, we have an extraordinary group of folks in the studio. Sherry Setchell is here from the Northfield Arts Guild production of Lysistrata. Welcome to Art Zany Radio.
Thank you, Paula. Good morning.
Oh, you know what? I think I forgot to turn on your mic. I turned on the wrong button.
I'll try again. Thank you, Paula. Good morning.
Oh, it's so glad to see you. And this is, you've been on a couple of times, but you are directing Lysistrata.
Yes, that's correct.
And so this is a show that opens next week, so we want people to hear about this. It's probably something that folks don't, it's not something that you can, immediately recognize.
Right. Yes.
And so we'll get into that, but I also want to introduce you to the professional theater artist that we have in the studio. Joining us is Allison Hyder. Welcome to Art Zany Radio.
Thank you. Good morning,
Paula. Is this really, truly your first time
on the radio?
Yes. I didn't realize that, because I would have thought, after all the plays and theater and, Arts Guild experiences you've had, but you have not joined us.
Mm-hmm. But Lysistrata, it's a great show, brought me here.
It got you here, so congrats, and we're excited to have you on the air today to celebrate with us. And Charlie Black, dare I say legend, can I?
Yes, legend.
A legend of the theater is joining us, and welcome again to Art Zany Radio.
Well, thank you, Paula. Good morning to you.
It's exciting, and I'm so glad that this show brought this group of people to our studio. I may not do the introduction about the show, because I think I'll have you guys talk about what it is, but first I want to have each of you tell us a little bit about yourself, maybe a little bit about your imagination, and introduce how you connected to the love of art. So how did that become a part of your everyday life? Because I know all of you have been involved in the arts for as long as I've known you, and as from the stories I hear, as long as you've been here on Earth. You want to start off, Sherry?
Sure. Well, it was either declare for a gang or join theater. So
in Omaha?
Yeah, in Omaha. Exactly.
I've heard about those Omaha.
Hey, now, they're hardcore. They are hardcore. My name is Sherry Setchell, and I am so excited to be back at the Arts Guild directing a show. I haven't directed something there since 2007, which was Burial at Thebes. And so I'm very excited to be back and working with this amazing group of people. We've had a really interesting rehearsal process in that, you know, it's summer, so things kind of bounce around a little bit, but they spark my imagination. Being around other people, talking, playing, you know, I can sit all by myself in my room working on blocking or working on ideas, but I don't really get going until I see the people I'm working with and I hear them and see how they move. And so I'd say my imagination works best in collaboration.
That is one of my tenets of my philosophy as well. I think people have that false idea that, you know, it's all about just sitting at the desk and, you know, being by yourself. Mm-hmm. But you have to have that connection. Yeah. It's essential.
So. Yeah, yeah. No, there have just been so many lovely moments where I'm like, oh, do that again. Like that thing that you just did. What did I do? And it's like, no, that was great. Let's see if we can grow that thing. You pointed at her at the right time. It was beautiful. Again.
Excellent. And Allison, you are returning now to Northfield. You grew up here.
Yes.
And have studied theater. Tell us about your imagination and your love of art.
Yeah, I have had a love of art since probably the day I was born. It runs in my family with my grandma, started one of the first community theaters in Wisconsin, and so my mom grew up in the theater, and I grew up, seriously, probably since the day I was born, sitting in the back of a theater as an infant. So when we moved to Northfield in 2004, we fell in love. My mom's the performing arts manager at the Arts Guild, and I could never stay away. I went to school for a few years, studied theater, communication, came back, and I'm right back on stage at the Arts Guild.
And that is lucky for us to be able to have you here, absolutely. And Charlie, you have always, you know, no matter what you've been doing, been connected to theater and performing.
Well, actually not true, although here in Northfield. Yes.
Okay, all right.
But I grew up in New Jersey. And
oh, so not when you were itty bitty?
No.
Oh.
No, I came to theater, in a memorable striptease performance in drag in Enter Venus with the Princeton University Triangle Club at the time, which I had joined on kind of a wild hair. I'm actually a scientist by training and really a science teacher. And many might think that that doesn't really necessarily marry well with the arts, but I think it does. The imagination piece is important. Also, the creativity in teaching and the collaborative effort that Sherry talked about. So because of this experience, some friends of mine with whom I was working said, oh, we need men for the chorus in Hello, Dolly, in 1973, and I appeared at rehearsal and sat in the back and tried to hide because I didn't read music, but Myrna Johnson, bless her heart.
Oh my gosh, Myrna.
discovered some sort of spark of talent in me and nurtured it.
And she is the root of many, many stories here in Northfield. Mm-hmm. And this makes perfect sense that you're in Lysistrata after that theater introduction.
It all makes sense now.
Yes, I might add, there were no women at Princeton at the time, unbelievably, but there weren't.
And that wasn't that long ago.
Well, I graduated in 69.
I know, so but that still doesn't feel like that long ago.
It's within the dim memory, mists of my memory, yes.
And that brings us, so we should probably introduce our listeners to the show, because many may not know. It was, in fact, written in 411 BC, which is why I referenced that date. It was Aristophanes. And who wants to describe that? Well, they're leaning towards Sherry, so we'll go ahead and have Sherry. If someone says, what are you doing? And you say, I'm directing this play at the Arts Guild, Lysistrata. What's it about? What do they say? How do you respond? Because it's a classic piece of theater.
Yes, it is. And actually, it's a piece that I've been in love with for a very long time. This is actually the third time that I have staged it or been a part of it.
Oh.
So it's a piece that I've kind of come and gone from many times. And so it means different things at different times. When I was in college, it's like, it's hilarious.
Because it has it's a comedy.
Yes, it's a comedy that is, it's very pointed. And I keep reminding the cast that Aristophanes kind of provided the Saturday Night Live content of the time, basically. So I'd like to preface it by saying that.
That's a really great analogy.
So there is political commentary in it, and that is very important and beautifully written. Our translator, Nicholas Rudall, does a great job in many ways of sharing that. I wish I knew the original Greek. But it is a political commentary, but it's also very bawdy and funny, and it's about the women of Greece, including the women from Athens, from Sparta, from Boeotia, from Corinth, coming all together to say no to their men about a very important element of life. Mostly relating to fertility. I guess we can say that, right?
Yes, we can.
And so they just say no so that the men will stop fighting, so that they will stop going to war with each other, because they've been at war for a very long time at this point. The play takes place about a year after a massive failure for the Athenians, where they sent their men off to the Sicilian expedition, is what it's known as, and they lost a huge number of people. And so the women are basically like, we're not going to do it anymore because you're just taking our babies and killing them off.
So essentially it's almost a peace protest.
Yeah, so it is a peace protest, and I hesitate to use that word in a lot of ways, because it's not necessarily an anti-war play. It's an anti Peloponnesian War play. Greeks were very much known for their fighting ways, and that was very, very important to them in defining themselves. So it, in many ways, yes, you could say it's an anti-war play or it's a peace play, but it really is about like taking matters into your own hands, coming up with a creative solution, and seeing the results at the end of it. And, you'll have to see what happens at the end. Of course, it works because it's a fairy tale in some ways also. But yeah, that's kind of the long and short of it, is that the women get together from all over. They decide that they're going to close the doors. They're going to seize the treasury of the Acropolis. They're going to close the doors. They're not going to see their men. The men go crazy, and they eventually decide to make peace, which actually didn't happen for another 7 years.
Well, and Charlie was telling me ahead of time a little about the culture at the time. The place of women isn't as we imagine today, and maybe we should address that too. Because sometimes learning about the setting, if we see it through today's lens, having that context is really important, I guess, is what I'm saying, of understanding. And you're talking about how women were treated in that culture.
Well, particularly learned on this subject, but as Sherry has shared with us, that women lived a very sequestered, women of a certain class lived a very sequestered life, and the outrageousness of this situation from the men's point of view is that here are the women out in the streets voicing their opinions, defying the men, and the men are, at least the old men's chorus that I'm part of, are just appalled, and they're having to confront the fact that they've been entitled all along and didn't know it.
Sounds familiar, right?
Well, yes.
Which I was wondering, at what point did you pick this for the Arts Guild season, and had you any idea of the types of political and, cultural issues that would be at the forefront of our days?
Well, I was gifted with this show from the Arts Guild. I applied to direct it after they had chosen it already, and I think part of it was mostly in relationship to the peaceful solution to war, right? They come up with this creative solution, but more and more it's like listening to the lines, it's like, oh, this is, I mean, and we know this, that our the things that we're facing now aren't new, is what I always want to tell people. This is an ancient paradigm that's been going on for thousands of years. You can look at our ancient literature. You can look at the way that women were treated and portrayed in literature and art. And it's been the same way for thousands of years. My amazing classics professor, Francesca, was one who really turned me on to exactly how that's happened. We were in the Clinton administration at the time. And so, you know, you see Bill as the quote unquote, like, weak man surrounded by the quote unquote strong woman, and how she manipulates him, and how that showed up in the media at the time. And then it's like, oh, we turn around and we see Livia and Augustus. It's like, okay, Augustus is seen as the weak man and Livia is seen as the strong, conniving woman. And so it's like, this is an ancient, ancient idea. So, it's really, sobering to see how this comes up again, and how, even in the context of this play, that the men are like, oh gosh, they're in the streets. What is going on here? You know, it's interesting that it really is echoing. And we had a lot of conversations about what that means, and about, we've talked about consent, and we've talked about, like, what does this play look like to people's eyes now versus in 411. So.
Yeah, and that's I think the important part of it, and it's something that will teach you about the past, and it connects you to the present, and hopefully it gives you some things to play with to bring into the future.
Mm-hmm.
And Allison, you play Lysistrata, yes?
Yes, I do.
So how have you connected? Was this a play that you had read prior to this year?
It's a play I had studied about, but not a play I had read. But it's a play that I immediately fell in love with. Prior to auditions, I read the script and I said, oh my goodness, I have to be a part of this. And luckily, Sherry was kind enough to cast me, so I got to be a part of it.
And how have you connected with her character, or what elements are most appealing to you?
She's a fascinating character because she's very determined and witty, but as Charlie said, still sequestered. You know, she isn't a complete rebel. But she's a rebel in the fact that she's willing to go out into the streets and talk to men, which is, in today's terms, you know, it doesn't seem like a rebellious gesture, but it truly is. And she's really, the men's chorus and women's chorus tell the story, but Lysistrata kind of weaves it together with her genius plans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's part of what happens is the that's where some of the comedy comes from, and that's something else. A lot of people think of a Greek play and they think, oh, serious drama, tragedy.
Not from Aristophanes.
Not from Aristophanes. No.
So what? Tell us about the comedy that people can expect. This is something we want people to know ahead of time, that it's you don't want to go in unprepared to
witness the magic.
Yes, I've heard the word bawdy and sort of burlesque and zestful.
Yes.
Yeah,
it's very bawdy. I mean, maybe Charlie can speak a little bit more to that, because the men's chorus provides a lot of the comedy bits and the comedy pieces.
I'm not sure how much to pardon the selection of words reveal. But yes, bawdy and burlesque, pantomime, Sherry had talked about, not in the sense that, you know, pantomime acting out, but pantomime in terms of the broad comedy. The men are absolutely, the men's chorus are just a group of complete, absolute chauvinists. So one of the issues, of course, is to have to go find that part of myself, which is there because I grew up male in this culture. And you know, you don't want to look at that.
That's hard,
you know,
yeah.
But the antagonism between the men's and women's chorus grows throughout the play, and it provides a lot of the comedy. There's a lot of physical comedy involved, which, as I mentioned to you, I'm finding a bit challenging at my vintage, but still.
I haven't heard it phrased that way before. That's a great turn of phrase.
But I don't know. As I said, I don't know how much to reveal. So, I think Sherry also talked about in rehearsals about this play having components of eros or erotic sexual love involved, or maybe not love, and then also agape, you know, the idea overarching a concept of a broader embrace of humanity, and they're kind of in conflict in this play.
Yeah, so this would be a play for, I don't know if it were rated, and what would you rate?
Not
for children. Definitely
not for children. I have a really hard time with that because I let my kid see a lot of things that I think other people wouldn't. She has a very good head on her shoulders, so you know, she saw Hedwig, she saw Rocky Horror this last time. So, but I'd say probably PG-14-ish, maybe 13. I often fall into the Beavis and Butthead category of humorists, and so there is a lot of that like humor in here for sure. Yeah, exactly. It's like, you said butt. it's just very, there's a lot of juvenile humor for sure in it, but I think that was part of Aristophanes, like, couching his important message so that it would be digestible. I mean, this was part of a religious festival, which I think is important.
Oh, yeah, let's talk more about that. Yeah, the fertility aspects, maybe.
Yes, yeah, so the fertility aspect of it was really important, and, you know, I have reminded the cast, like, this wouldn't even have been a thing to the people of Athens when they saw it. You know, they would be, oh, that's something I see in somebody's front yard every morning. You know, it's fertility was a very big part of their lives versus us, who we have a very different idea about what that looks like. So, yeah, it's kind of funny to think that this was church in a way. Like, they're going to church. That's a huge oversimplification of it, of course, but it's that's what they gathered at.
And knowing that context is important for the audience to as they process what they're hearing and try not to see it completely through the lens of today, mm-hmm. but to recognize that cultural and historical elements. Mm-hmm. If you're tuning in, this is Art Zany Radio. I'm Paula Granquist, and we're talking about Lysistrata at the Northfield Arts Guild. It opens next weekend, but I'm going to guess you're going to want to get your tickets soon. And it is tickets are available right now, northfieldartsguild.org. You can go online and get those. Tickets are $17 for adults, $12 for seniors and students. And it runs for 2 weekends, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. All shows are in the evening at 7:30. There's an opening night reception, which is always a lot of fun, and then a pre-show discussion at 7 o'clock on Sunday, the first Sunday at 7:30. The show starts. The pre-show discussion is at 7 o'clock. And we are wanting to make the note that the play is, in fact, at the Northfield Arts Guild Theater. Sometimes the summer production is in Central Park. This one is going to be at the theater, so folks should know where to go. And then you don't have to worry about the rain. You don't
bugs.
Exactly. So this is something that everyone should know. You can sometimes get tickets when you go on the day of the show, but I would highly recommend getting those in advance. The Arts Guild makes it really easy now. Just, you know, go to your northfieldartsguild.org, click on theater, and you can buy them right online. And I love that. That makes it a lot easier to book your evening. So plan those adventures for the next couple of weekends. Tell me how the conversations with the it's a giant cast, I think.
Yes.
25, 20,
yes.
I don't know.
It's 20 people. I have a handful of people playing two roles or kind of doubling a little bit as well. So, we could have had, you know, 30 people even in the cast. There's room for a lot of stuff. And it's got amazing women's roles in it, oddly enough. You know, we've got these great female characters. The women's chorus is amazing, and Lysistrata and her friends, Kalanike and Merhini, are the best.
I'm glad you said those pronunciations.
Yes. Yes.
So, I didn't. I saw the list, and I said, I think I'm sure you do that one.
We've had a lot of pronunciation lessons throughout the process. But yeah, no, I forgot your question, Paula. I'm sorry. I'm like the queen of tangents. Did I answer your question?
Absolutely, you did. I don't remember it either.
Well, I think the beauty of this larger cast is the positive energy that comes from it. We're really a family, and that's what I love about working at the Northfield Arts Guild. I grew up with all of these actors and directors as my family, and we get to show that on stage and show that love for each other. And it's so powerful as being Lysistrata and being this strong woman who has a mind, and she has this great group of women behind her cheering, and
who are actually great women. Like, that's
right.
It's just
mm-hmm.
It's so, yeah, it's been a really powerful rehearsal process.
Although I find Kalanike awfully scary at times.
She is terrifying. I just love her to pieces,
yeah,
man.
No kidding.
Who's playing that role? I forgot.
Jill Luoma Overstreet.
Oh, yeah, that's a name I didn't recognize.
She, bless Bob Gregory Bjorklund, as always. I feel like I have to mention Bob's name every time I'm on the radio.
Exactly.
But he helped me connect with her, and she's so fun to watch, and just... She and Allie have this great chemistry on stage that is, I always feel so lucky with all of my casts, and this is no exception to that moment. It's
they're all smiling. I wish you could see how beautiful their smiles are. They're thinking about the cast members and the funny things that must be happening.
It's true. I mean, we've had a lot of serious discussions, and we've had some rough roads because of... we've had people on vacation. I mean, summer, you know, so we have to make these adjustments, but and the men's chorus, they just blow me away every night. They're so funny together, and the way they interact with each other is just, to me, it's the essence of what makes good theater, and it's really a unique show in that respect, because we can be, I hate to use the word, we can be real adults in these moments, but we can be silly and goofy as well as, like, mm-hmm. have this maturity about us as well. So we can have these moments, but we can also have those beautifully emotive moments where it's like, yeah, this thing that she just said is, like, that's a real concern. It's still a concern today. I'm gonna tear up, though. No. The cast is just extraordinary. Every single one of them. And it's, like, such a broad range of experience, of different bodies, different faces, different... Just, I love the word colors. I would say, like, you need that. That line needs a little bit more color. And it's like, there's so much color in their character that you know what they're doing at any given point. There's just so much clarity to it. And I feel like, you know, as I said, there's been some stresses for various reasons, but also we've just had this beautiful, like, fun, buoyant time a lot of the time.
And that'll come through to the audience. I think that always plays well. And I'm thinking about the audience. Is there something in advance of going, if you know, that they need to know about following the play? Or I think we've talked a little bit about the premise. We've got the men's chorus and the women's chorus and this you know, rebellion or this uprising happening. Is there something about this particular style or structure of play that, or, and I also wanted to ask you about how you've decided to costume and set the play, because there's probably a number of different choices you could have made in regards to that. So what will the audience see?
Does anyone else want to talk for a bit?
Let me think. No.
Okay, right on. No.
We can go on to another question.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, because we were initially set in the park, I chose to go more representative with the costumes, which I feel works really well in kind of that outdoor setting, which provides its own set to me. It's a thing and a character in itself when you're outside. And so the costumes, you will not see togas on stage, really. The commissioner, I think, wears one, but that's about it. But you will see... it will have that kind of ancient feel to it. But it will not look like, Caesar, we come not to bury Caesar, but to praise him, but to bury him. You know, it will definitely not look like that. Some of the choices I made for a costume, and again, like set, we were, you know, being outside, and so that was a different situation, and I didn't get... we're kind of slapdashing it inside, and so we'll see what happens. But as far as the costume piece, you know, I chose to make the older women's chorus, and I use that word very lightly because they're not actually older women, but they're very vibrant. They have very bright colors, and the old men's chorus is like olive drab, and like they're old military uniforms that are ripped and torn and kind of look. So I wanted to communicate that old way versus new way through the costumes. Lysistrata and the quote-unquote younger women are wearing pastels, and they look like they're not quite to that fiery stage of being yet.
I love that description.
So I kind of went with feel rather than definite. I just didn't want to see a bunch of, you know, chitons and, wraps on stage. It's like, okay, well, that's fine. We've done that. And I didn't really want to also go way out there and be like, we're going to bring it into the modern era and we're going to do this, because we are really presenting it as it would have been presented. And I think that's what also I want people to know. I didn't look at it and be like, I'm going to make a, you know, feminist parable here and do this and that. It's like, I really am trying to honor Aristophanes' words and the way it was intended. I'm trying. We are making a couple of different choices for sure.
Yeah, there's no video from the first few performances that you can
go
back and
see. I can't go and look and see. But
no,
I mean,
YouTube for that.
I had looked at other people's designs and other people's, the way they were doing it. And I think sometimes it's important to know what you don't want. You know, I watched a production where it was all about the sex, like every bit of it. Lysistrata was dressed in like club wear and was sort of valley girl and this whole, and I'm like, well, that just dilutes the whole thing. Like, it doesn't make sense to me. And we have to also remember, like, Lysistrata would have been played by a man. You know, all would have been men.
I didn't think, I immediately thought that would have been a way
No.
Were the women in the audience?
That's actually unclear.
Oh.
So what I've read is that they don't know if women would have been in the audience. So I'd like to imagine that there were women in the audience, because that's been part of our conversation is why is this character here? Why is this character here? And I'm like, well, I think it's a reflection to the people in the audience. Like, oh, if Kalanike, who's kind of the, you know, sex-starved, like, sweet young wife, can go ahead with this plot, then you too, woman in the audience.
Well, that must have been an interesting experience for men of that, you know, time frame to be portraying. And so even for them to have the courage to be a part of that would have, and those, playing those women who were in the street, which would have seemed that I love that. My brain is kind of trying to wrap around that idea right now.
I think it also brings up, the audience doesn't need to know a lot of the historical context of this play. It will become pretty evident. There are a few specific references, one to the disaster in Sicily, where the Greeks lost their entire fleet and everyone with it. That's referenced, and that obviously is specific. But the interesting thing I think about this is thinking about how a Greek audience at the time would have read this play. As Sherry pointed out, it's frequently talked about as being proto-feminist, and in reality, it probably wasn't for Aristophanes. But I think a modern audience is going to see it that way.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to bring different sensibilities to the play than would have been there. Originally.
And I'm thinking about the idea that this is part of the Arts Guild Theater Year, which is Striking Conversations, is the sort of our overarching framework of the plays. And so that'll be a part of the conversation that happens on that first Sunday at 7 o'clock. So that's not this Father's Day Sunday, but the next Sunday.
Yeah.
And, what do you imagine? Do you know who's going to lead that conversation, or what are? Because I enjoy that when there's an opportunity to have see a piece of art and then have that moment of, well, what should we expect, or how do I know, or what am I coming into? Do you know who's going to be leading
this? I actually don't know yet. We've sent out a couple of asks, and so hopefully we'll know soon.
Yes.
If not, it'll just be me out there talking. We have a couple of people in mind that we've talked to, and we're specifically focusing on women who have been either involved at the grassroots political level here in town, or maybe business owners, or women who have just been involved in that kind of male world in a way, who can come in and talk about how they've advocated for themselves, or how that's still a battle that we're fighting right now. Again, I don't want to get too self-righteous or big about it, but this is not new, kids.
Right?
This
yeah.
is not new.
Yeah, think about 411 BC. Like that is an eternity ago, but it's not in the world history.
And just back to the piece that Charlie mentioned. You know, I think what Aristophanes was trying to say was things are so bad. The women have now gotten involved. You know, that's part of what it is, that these women who, you know, Kalanike says, like, we're not good for anything except sitting around in our cute little negligees and our sweet little slippers. And then Lysistrata's like, that's our power. Like, let's leverage this. Mm-hmm. Let's do it. You know, come on.
Or
not do it. Exactly. So the importance of that, that's kind of what he was saying. Like, you men are so incompetent and incapable. These women who usually sit and weave and raise their kids are coming out to give you a very important message. And the words he gives to Lysistrata and to several of the women's chorus members, they're very, very powerful. So in that way, I guess you could look at it as like women's empowerment or something along those lines, because they're not like sweet, cute little like, oh, honey, you shouldn't, don't throw rocks at your friend because you should use your words. They're very cutting. They're very cutting and really powerful and not self-pitying or, I mean, like, that's what I love about it, is that there's these lines that it's, yeah, speaking so much truth in this moment and in every moment where we've been in conflict.
At one point, I don't know the name of the woman that Wendy plays.
Yes, Woman 2.
Woman 2. makes a very poignant statement about how we women love Athens too, and we pay taxes also, because there's a lot of one of the dynamics is that the women have tied up the money in the Acropolis, and the old men are pensioners, and they're not going to get their pay if the women continue to control the Acropolis. And she says, we pay our taxes. We pay our taxes in baby boys. And for me, it's kind of one of the moments at the heart of the play that is really poignant.
Has there been any generational, interpretations that I'm thinking about the different experiences, even from Charlie's to Allison's, there have been different experiences with men and women in the world, and any conversations or things that have been reflected through the experiences in the play that have been intriguing to you? Everybody's looking at Allison, so Allison's going to answer the question.
I think it is fascinating. I think that's what's so cool about the show is it's a lot of theater veterans, but it's theater veterans. You know, I'm a theater veteran at 23, and Charlie's a theater veteran at
25.
More than, 25.
For
your 25th year.
Yes.
Oh, no.
It's more than that, even.
Oh, yeah, for my 46th year, I think.
And so I think with that, you know, Charlie even saying when he was at Princeton, there weren't women. Well, that's obviously a different reality than I grew up in. And so I think that's what makes this show so cool, is that we have people of so many ages, and all of us have seen strong women, and we've all seen misogynistic tendencies, and we've all lived through various wars that never seem to end. And with that, we can all bring different energy and insight, and I think that's what makes our production of Lysistrata so powerful.
Plus, I have 4 former students in the cast, one of whom actually called me Charlie the other day. I won't name who that was, and she was so embarrassed.
Was it Mr. Black?
Yeah, well, then she corrected that to Mr. Black. And she also had a sort of a bawdy line that she had to say to me, but she couldn't say it to me, so Sherry had her switch it to
She's saying it to someone else.
Yeah, so she's saying,
I want to be, you know.
But that's kind of funny. It's sweet. It's really nice to see, Allie and Dion and Shannon and Birch are all former students of mine, and so it's
and that says that we're all in this together, right? Like all of these conversations, all of these dramas, these histories, we are all a part of it, so we can be a part of changing things too, mm-hmm. and moving forward and taking things and taking power. And that, I think, is a fascinating piece of it too. And you mentioned earlier, Sherry, that these aren't new stories, mm-hmm. these are all repeated stories, but we need to check in with those older stories occasionally to figure out, maybe to enlighten us, to challenge us, to push us. I think it's just really an extraordinary thing that a play from that time can be carried through, and we can be having these conversations about things happening in our own world as it reflects through this work from Aristophany.
I just want to add also, one of the nice things I think about community theater in general and the Guild is that you get to play your own age. You know? If you're doing a college production of Lysistrata, who are the old men? Who are the old women? You know,
that's true, right? It truly has.
I do think that adds a lot of heft to it and a lot of credence to it. You know, that it is, and I think that is what's made me kind of emotional during rehearsals. Is that when people are talking about these things, it's not just, oh, I'm acting this idea. It's like I know what I'm talking about,
right?
Here. Like, this is something I've either done or I've seen other people do or I've been a part of in some way. And so, you know, and back to the story piece, what I really appreciate about this show is that everybody has a stake in what's going on in the story itself. It's not just one person is going to benefit. It really is about bringing community and bringing peace. And, you know, Lysistrata talks about the Greek fighting Greek. It's just absolutely ridiculous when we have this common enemy, Persia, sitting on our doorstep. You know, it really is about everybody has to make the choice together. Everybody has to come to what I love to call group consensus about it. So it's not just one person. It's everybody in the show gets the benefit of what happens, of this brave act that occurs, and like the end of it is that we all are better at the end because we worked together. What?
And that's incredible. And now I'm going to ask this question because I'm not sure how I'm going to ask. I was thinking about this. So I was talked earlier about this idea of, you know, our DNA and the story of our history, but also the creative DNA. And I thought about the idea of actors and directors and producers and people that are in the show have an experience with the show in a way that the audience will not. I mean, they can both immerse in that moment, but you have a deeper connection and immersion to a story. And I just weaving that happens between your life and the character's life and the, you know, that time that you're, short time that you're together. And I'm thinking about what changes in an actor through the experience of a play, and, you know, how do each of those successive pieces that you're putting together, you know, carry through you the stories of our world. And so I'm not sure I'm asking a really great question, but I'm pondering this idea. So hang with me and play a little bit here. What do you think about when you, you know, are immersed in that world and in that character? Let's start with Lysistrata.
So I think
other ways. Actually, Allison can speak. You don't have to speak as Lysistrata.
Yeah, I don't want to speak in verse. But I think it's extremely important. That's exactly why I do theater, is that concept, is that I can throw myself into Lysistrata and Lysistrata can throw herself into me.
Yeah, that's a better way of saying it.
Right.
Thank you.
And then it's our job as actors to then bring that to the people in the audience and really speak to them. And so I think that's cool, you know, playing Lysistrata, and I, as a young woman going into the business world, I'm also sequestered in a lot of ways. And yes, I'm not sequestered to my house. I can walk down Division Street just fine. But, you know, in a lot of ways, we still have that in our society, unfortunately. And so being able to bring those things that I face every day into Lysistrata, but also bring the fire of Lysistrata into my everyday life after I leave rehearsal, is really powerful.
I think that was a perfect, and that's exactly what I'm trying to think of. And then I'm thinking of, Charlie, think of how many DNAs of plays you have in you. And just even that little story you told about having students who now are performing on stage with you. What do you think of when you think of that idea?
As I'm approaching a character, I always think about it as sort of mining, that I believe that all the potential is in me or in us. We just have to dig down and find that part of our character and begin to express it. It's very therapeutic in some regards. You know, I don't want to be a misogynist, but I have to own that I was trained to be.
Mm.
So I can find that and use that. And then, of course, you have the dynamics between the characters, among the characters, and in the drama that help to express that too. But anyway, I always think about starting with the words, and then who is this person? Okay, now where do I find that in myself? Mm. Let's bring that up and put it out there. And I just love that process.
And that's probably why you keep coming back. And that's, you know, something that you get to bring. I love the way that you said that, to bring a little bit of the character back out into the world.
Right.
And for you, Sherry, you've done all aspects of the theater world. How do you relate to that idea of character and story coming alive?
Yeah, it is interesting. It's just like Allison said, there's always that little bit of that character that you carry with you all the time. And one of the interesting conversations, I hope you don't mind me sharing this, that we have had is about how women often don't have those good, powerful roles. Like, how many times have we played, like, the, you know, the questionable woman who has loose morals or is, for lack of a better word, kind of slutty or this or that, or ditzy or this or that, and, like, how hard it is to shift from like, oh, this is my habit here, and like, oh, I can't make that choice here because the whole point of this play is that she's like doing this, you know. And I had a similar experience when I did Hedwig. Was like, oh my gosh, every character I've played for the last how many years has used sexuality in some way, shape, or form to get what she wants or as part of her leading character. And so pulling all of that off and being like, whoa, what is this? And fortunately, I had like the male persona to use, to leverage, but it was still that interesting character, like, oh my god, it's true, like, we can't play anything but prostitutes and moms. Like that moment of what. And the gift of being able to like craft somebody like Lysistrata, who, you know, I remind the cast, there's not really any psychology here. That wasn't an idea, right? It really wasn't an idea.
Yeah, that's a new modern idea.
Yeah, it's a modern idea. I call it WYSIWYG. What you see is what you get. The characters say exactly, you know, they say what's going on in their brains. Mm-hmm. And the beauty of that is that you really can use that as a blank slate to, like, draw your own character on in a different way than you would have to do, like, something Arthur Miller wrote or, you know, something along those lines where it's like, you know that there's, like, deep-rooted, like, torment in there. Like, this woman's like, no, I'm just done. And she says it.
And I am so, so grateful that each of you take the time. It's a community theater to, you know, immerse yourself in this experience so that we can all share with you as you perform. Lysistrata opens up next weekend, Friday, June 20th. 22nd at 7:30, and that's at the Arts Guild Theater located at 411 3rd Street West. But you should get your tickets online because it's running for 2 weekends. It will probably fill fast, so
yes.
Go ahead and go online, northfieldartsguild.org, and you can just click, and you got your tickets.
Yeah, don't miss it.
Don't miss it, exactly.
Too hot for the park.
Yes. And maybe we'll end with that.
Thank you, Paula.
Oh, thank you so much. I want to thank Allison Hyder and Charlie Black and Sherry Setchell for being here on Artzany Radio. Mm-hmm. It's my pleasure to bring these stories to you. And I'm going to go ahead and close because I've got a couple of stories from past shows that I want to make sure that help you plan your weekend. So I'm going to go ahead and tell you about the events happening around town. This tonight, Friday, Jessica Pearl was here last week, as well as Julie Faulkler, talking about the creative crawl in downtown Faribault. That is happening from 5 to 8 tonight. There's going to be all kinds of businesses open, artist demonstrations, just a time to go and get to know Faribault again and reconnect with all the changes that are happening and see Fleur de Lis Gallery. They're in the middle of transition, but Jessica assured us there would be something available. The Paradise Center for the Arts has a play opening and the art gallery and just a beautiful space if you haven't been there. The Upper East Side is another place that's new in downtown Faribault, so please go and check that out tonight. And then this weekend, a couple weeks ago, the Cannon River Clay Tour was on the show, and I talked with some of the artists who will be presenting. There are 10 local clay artists at 4 Northfield area studio sites, Eureka Pots, Larch Hill Farm, and Cannoli Studio, and Holmquist Pottery. And so you can get all of those details at CannonRiverClayTour.com. That's Saturday and Sunday from 10 to 5, this weekend only. So just an extraordinary opportunity to see some clay artists from across the country come and share their story. And I also want to have you bookmark Monday, June 18th, 7 o'clock at Content Books. Ahmed Ismail Youssef is going to be there presenting his book, The Lion's Binding Oath. I had a chance to do the interview with him this week. It'll air later in the summer on Artzany Radio. An extraordinary man. This is his collection of short stories about Somalia and his life in Somalia as well as his life here in Minnesota. He's lived here for 20 years, but he has written a story that reflects life as Somalia was before it became war-torn, his growing up there, and his life in Minneapolis through these characters in these short stories. And I had an incredible conversation, so join him on Monday at Content. Folks, this is Art Zany. You've been listening to the show that hopefully helps you learn to add some Art Zany to your life. And I hope in the meantime, until next time, you'll enjoy your imagination.
You've been listening to Art Zany, Radio for the Imagination, with your host, Paula Granquist. Art Zany is brought to you each week by the Northfield Arts Guild and by the Paradise Center for the Arts in Faribault.